Hey guys, this is Cole Kublik from WJOX in Birmingham and the SEC Network, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 435.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Now everybody, come on everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family that we appreciate so much. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we've got big stuff to talk about tonight. We got to look back at not so much the Samford game as how Auburn did in what was effectively A-Day 2, right? How the, because everybody got to play. And we'll look at that. And, of course, we got to do our preview of the Iron Bowl. But first, just a quick programming note that as I descended to the Palatial White Rocket Studios a few minutes ago, I was watching the end of the first game in the basketball tournament we're playing in this week. And it looks like Richmond is going to defeat Wisconsin. And that means if we beat New Mexico later tonight, it'll already be over by the time people listen to this. Then we will be playing Richmond on Tuesday. And that's interesting to me because Richmond hasn't been all that the last few years. They had that one moment that they beat our Charles Barkley team in our first NCAA tournament in 84. But other than that, Richmond hadn't done a whole lot over the years, whereas Wisconsin has always been a tournament team. You know, they've always been a team that does well in tournaments. So are you surprised at all, and what do you make of this, if anything?
I honestly didn't know anything about Richmond or Wisconsin's current roster. I just know that Wisconsin was expected to win. They're a big favorite. I think they're one of the better teams in the Big Ten. So this may just be an early season, you know, neutral site road thing that messes them up. But
I don't know what New Mexico's record is, but it looks like, and I know that teams play kind of cupcakes in basketball to start the season usually, but it looked like this is several very good teams because Auburn's, I think, 5-0. I think Richmond's 5-0, and I think Wisconsin was like 4-1, so now they'll be 4-2. And so this is not a cakewalk of a tournament, you know. This is a pretty serious deal. And so I'm looking forward to seeing it tonight and tomorrow night, seeing how they do. But it would be nice to get a couple of wins and come back home for Thanksgiving with like 7-0 record and maybe moving on up in the top 25, you know. Be nice.
Be a good thing.
All right. Well, so I guess I get to do this one more time. This past Saturday was the infamous
Samford Hate Week 2019.
And we put the great Samford Hate Week 2019 behind us, and I feel like we expressed our hate. Now, we don't hate Samford. It's just that's kind of become our running joke that we pick the teams that are like it was Liberty, you know, and now it's Samford. But I feel like we expressed some hate, maybe with our situation, you know, maybe with our three losses we expressed some, because even the third string guys look pretty solid against Samford.
Well, I think it's easy for, in these kind of games, especially coming off the Georgia game, for the team to just kind of roll out of bed. I think we have more talent than them. We don't have to play hard. We can just, you know, show up and win. And I think that clearly wasn't the case in this game.
No.
I think what you saw Auburn do on Saturday was a bunch of guys showed up and they were in a bad mood and they took it out on Samford. And especially both sides of the ball, the guys played very hard. But I think the defense, like, they took it personally every time Samford got a yard.
Yeah. How dare you get a yard and against us?
Preposterous.
It was. And we even saw, obviously the depth killed them because we got It seemed like our second and third string players did even better against them than our first string did for some reason. Maybe they were, you know, they had the best that they had to offer going up against our first string, and then by the time we get to our second and third string, they were pretty worn down, I imagine. So you know, you had Will Appleton going 2 for 2 for 17 yards with a 98.5 quarterback rating, and Sean Shivers had 9 carries for 55 yards. I tell you, Whitlow looked good. I thought Whitlow looked like the best of the running backs. What did you think?
No, he did. He really did look good Saturday. But I think some of it is he just finally getting back to full speed.
Yeah, that's right. Just in time. I mean, we certainly going to need him and DJ both. I mean, DJ had 8 carries for 42 yards, 5.3 average. He was having to really kind of grind it out there, though, and he is a grinder. But it seemed like they were able to stop him, and that just makes me again worry about our offensive line and our being able to play power football. It seems like our running success does not come from power football. It comes from finding clever little ways to get on the edge. Would you agree?
I mean, 100%. I was looking at a stat today that I was going to talk about in the Alabama game, but it's appropriate here that we are much more effective running the ball on the perimeter than we are up the middle. Much more effective.
Yes. Yeah. our receivers seem to block better for receivers than the offensive line does as offensive linemen to a degree. I don't understand it, but enough about them. But Harold Joyner had 1 carry for 17 yards. That was nice. And you got to take all this with a grain of salt, realizing that our second and third string later guys were mostly playing against the tail end of whatever Samford has. So, you know, that at that point, you should be getting 17 yards a carry. But Shivers was like getting first string carries in the first quarter.
Yeah, no, they gave him a lot of work in this game, which was good.
Yeah.
I was glad to see it.
In fact, the back that kind of had to wait until the second half to even get in surprised me was Kmart.
Yeah, you'd think on a senior and kind of the last home game like this that they would have given him some more carries, but
yeah, he still ended up with 8, which is the second most, tied with DJ. But I was just surprised that, you know, usually he kind of leads off, and he didn't even come in, I don't think, until maybe the second quarter, maybe the third, but definitely not the first. So that just surprised me. But so Bo is 15-23, 150 yards, and what did you think about Colt Sebring? 5 for 7, 84 yards.
Before you leave Bo, you have to say that, like, Bo's passing was mostly in a monsoon.
Yes, that's true.
It was pouring rain in the first half of that game.
That is true.
So any stats that he has have to be taken that. And I think so he and the running backs both and the receivers not turning the ball over in the first half was really big.
Yeah.
But, no, I thought, Team Dad looked very good. He ran the ball really well. He was decisive with it. Good on the zone read. So yeah, Cord looks solid.
I loved the one of our listeners, one of our Twitter friends, tweeted a little video clip of him running basically the triple option. What do you call it? The option pass thing. You know.
Yes. RPO.
RPO. And he like took it himself, faked it to the running back, and then as he was about to be tackled himself, pitched it way outside to Matthew Hill. Now, you know, the first couple of times I watched it, I was watching Hill kind of run around in circles and get tackled for very little gain, and I was like, oh, okay. But if you watch that clip going around and you watch Colt Sebring, watch his reaction, it's pretty funny because he pitches it and then he just kind of stands there watching, you know, Matthew Hill try to do something. And he's kind of like, his body language is like he's bowling and he's just thrown the ball and he's trying to urge the ball in the right direction, you know? And then when Matthew Hill ends up giving up, runs in a circle and gives up a bunch of yards and gets tackled, he just kind of like flops his hands. And I just thought it was so fun. You could just read his mind going, no, not over this way. No, just turn it up. Ah, crap. That's pretty much what he's saying there mentally. It's pretty obvious. So, but yeah. So the defense looked amazing. I mean, we wouldn't have expected anything less. But they were, and because it was that pouring rain, they could have had like 3 more interceptions. Honestly.
Oh yeah. No. At halftime, Samford had 35 total yards, and we had 3 turnovers. And you're right. It could have been 2 or 3 more easy.
Yeah. bounced off their hands type of thing, you know, where it was just, yep. And I'm glad you said that, because the rain is one of those things where, depending on how the television is showing it, you either are very aware it's pouring down rain, or you don't quite, you know, even with HD TV, you know, with the big screen TV and all, in some angles it just kind of looks like a mist, like it's fog or something. Then they change to a different angle and you're like, oh gosh, it's pouring down. So I wasn't always conscious of that, and that's a very good point. So yeah, we had about 11 different players record a rushing statistic, and about 10 record a receiving statistic. And let's see, Whitlow had 2 for 46, Seth had 4 for 45. Marquise McClain, I thought he graduated 4 years ago, John. Where did he come from?
He's been playing every week.
Okay. I just haven't heard his name called, really, so all right.
We don't throw him the ball, but he's been out there.
Yeah. Well, they threw him the ball this time. Zach Farrar. I liked him as the Emperor in the Dune movie in 1984. What did you think of 2 touchdowns?
He's the backup.
He was supposed to be the Darius Slayton.
But I think, you know, we put Seth Williams and Schwartz out there, and Seth Williams has really kind of taken over that spot. And we're not using him the same way, but he's playing in that position. So it's clearly like the third string guy there.
Yeah. Well, he 2 for 2. All he did was catch touchdowns. He was the Chris Carter of Auburn this weekend. Matthew Hill got to see the ball a little bit and not be on special teams. That was nice. 3 for 25. We have a receiver named Jackson McFadden. Who knew?
He's a walk-on.
He's like if you combined Auburn's greatest running back and Arkansas's greatest running back, Jackson McFadden. Nice. Except probably without all the ability of those two players. One reception for 4 yards. And Harold Joyner scored the touchdown on the little play that didn't work against Georgia. So that's great. That's great. Didn't you just kind of want it to not work again since it didn't work against Georgia?
It was a little bit of like, why are we running this play? Like, is the wound a little fresh here?
Yeah. Oh, jeez. We also learned that our field goal kicking game is every bit as fragile as we were afraid it was, which is not good going into the Iron Bowl. I guess we're going to just keep saying that every year until Anders graduates. We're going to be like, well, he's still young, you know. He's really consistent inside the 40. He'll come around to getting those 55-yard field goals.
Here's the movable force meets movable object kind of thing. he's really struggling. No opposing kicker has missed a field goal against Alabama this season.
Wait, no kicker has missed a field goal?
Against Alabama this season in a game.
That is a crazy statistic. I
don't have facts to back this up.
But I don't know if that's ever happened before. Now, again, bear in mind the rain. He was kicking and he got blocked once, which wasn't really his fault, I guess. And the rain is there too. So
I'm going to look up the national stats to see if they're the leader in that category. Keep going.
That is insane. Well, anyway, that's Samford. I don't have really much else to say other than Will Appleton, 2 for 2, awesome. Colt Sebring, 5 for 7 for 84 yards, awesome. Bo Nix had the lowest rating, but again, playing with the first string in the rain. So,
this stat gets crazier. Are you ready?
Oh, boy.
There are 3 teams in the country who the opposing kicker has not missed a field goal against.
Good gosh. Okay. Three.
Three teams at this point in the season.
Okay.
One of those teams is Colorado State.
Okay.
Okay. The other two are Alabama and Clemson.
Oh, wow.
Now, Clemson, their defense is so good, opponents that have only attempted 7 field goals.
I was just about to say, the one factor that would be a control on that is if they're just not attempting any field goals. If the other team never crosses midfield, then you're never going to have a team miss a field goal against you, because you're never going to have a team attempt goal against you. So, and if you're a good team like that, by the time they finally do get across midfield, they're probably so far behind, they're going to go for it on 4th down.
That's it. You're up 20 at that point.
Yeah. You're right. It's not just in a vacuum. You have to consider the situation. And if it's a team with a really good defense, in fact, I'm surprised we're not on that list, honestly, because, you know, we either stop teams and make them punt, or they, you know, they don't go for the field goal. They go for the first down largely. So I bet not that many field goals have been missed against us. I bet it's not many.
You would be incorrect. The other teams are 9 of 15 against Auburn this year.
Wow, that surprises me.
Yeah.
So you do have facts to back this up.
But that's apparently field goal kickers are really bad because that's only kind of middling, I think, percentage.
Wow. Okay.
No, actually, no, I'm wrong. We're 12th in the country at opposing field goal percentage.
Huh. Crazy.
Anyhow.
All right. Well. There was one other thing that happened in this game that we got to talk about, and that's Jamion Sherwood targeting, which he was not targeting.
Yeah, that was BS.
Hitting the other player in the chest with your face mask is not hitting them in the helmet with your helmet. I don't know what the replay officials were smoking during and before this game, but they sure were not being straight up. I know everybody listening is expecting something and they're not going to get it. So ha.
The best part was Gus talking to the referee, and he was like, this is what Gus said when that happened. He's like, Mark, we got the Iron Bowl next week.
Yeah, like, oh, sorry, like, coach. I didn't realize
what do you do with the replay here, man.
I didn't realize you have a big game coming up. Let me reverse my call. But it was not even that. It was just that I don't know. Like I say, I don't know what was wrong with those referees. I don't know what they'd been doing.
Smoke weed every day.
I don't know what those referees had going on, but something was going on. And so, it's really more of a depth issue because they have a lot of good receivers, and we need all the bodies we can roll out there. Now, of course, Gus will immediately spin. I love his spin on these things, right? He's like, well, he'll be fresh in the second half. You know what I mean? He'll come in the third quarter and be able to immediately provide useful depth in our secondary.
He will be fresh.
He better be. So, unfortunately, if we'd had like an injury in the can you imagine if we'd suffered in that mud in the rain? If we'd suffered a bad injury in the secondary, and then not having him either, we'd have to somehow get to halftime without giving up 5 touchdown passes against those receivers that worry me. I don't worry about their quarterback so much or whatever, but those receivers, man.
It is a real thing because Sherwood's been playing really well the last few weeks. I mean, he's been playing well all season, but especially the last few weeks, he's picked his game up. And I think when he starts next year, he's going to be really good. And so, you know, we're going to have to play a lot more nickel and dime against Alabama because of his receivers. So losing him, it hurts. He'll be out there a lot in the second half for sure.
This is one of those things that you just kind of wish the SEC office could look at during the week and reverse. Now, obviously, they can't reverse a play that would change the outcome of the game because the game is over. But you would think they at least could reverse calls that are future going, you know, like this, that don't have any impact on the game, but that impact future games erroneously. I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but
yeah, that the conspiracy theorists out there are thinking, yeah, that's a good idea.
Well,
that would go in our favor all the time.
All right. Well, enough about Samford. This is the week where I get to play this famous clip.
I got great news for you.
Auburn beat Alabama by 12 points.
No, this is important, honestly.
Now look, Frank, it is important. What is all that? That is, of course, an actual line, if people don't know. I think most Auburn people know this by now, but that's an actual line from the original 1960s Ocean's 11 with Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin instead of George Clooney and Brad Pitt. And that's Angie Dickinson in the role that Julia Roberts played in the new version. You know, the 2000, I can't believe it's 18 years old. Can you believe Ocean's 11, the new Ocean's 11 is 18 years old now?
We're old, man.
Oh my gosh, that's one of my favorite movies. It's always been in my top 10 ever since 2001. Came out the same year as Fellowship of the Ring. That's mind-blowing. But yeah, the original, the original one from back in the 60s, Frank Sinatra's on the elevator with Angie Dickinson, and he says that great.
I got great news for you.
Auburn beat Alabama by 12 points.
No, this is important, honestly.
Isn't that cool that they talked about that game in a Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, Andy Dickinson movie? That just blows my mind. I tried to get T-shirts made a few years ago with that, and they wouldn't let me use it. Obviously, I had to find one of those offshore accounts, you know, that aren't so prickly about copyrights and things, like Redbubble. They're very good at, they'll just print whatever. They don't care. So maybe I'll do that. I'm still thinking about T-shirts for our listeners, too. I'm still thinking about doing the something like...
Soundboard Appreciation Club?
That would be one. The one I've had in mind all season is Coach Snyder says when I'm not listening to the AU Wishbone... Coach Snyder says when I'm not rooting for the Southern Fighting, I'm listening to the AU Wishbone. So there's a number of them we could do. I got to get on the... In the off season, maybe I'll get on the stick when I have a little more time. And because right now we are using up a lot of our week. We are for those of you that don't know, we are currently doing a live Sunday afternoon show. So and it's for everybody. It's not just for the patrons. I mean, you know, ideally we could do something like that just for the patrons, and I'd like to. But the thing is, we want as many people to watch it and have live comments and questions, and so we kind of have to make it open for everybody. So join us on YouTube, on our YouTube channel, AU Wishbone TV, on Sunday afternoons. I'm sure we'll do one on Sunday, this coming Sunday after the Iron Bowl. And we usually are on about 2 o'clock. It's 1 o'clock Central, right? 1 o'clock Central, 2 o'clock Eastern. And it was a little bit later this time because we were having all kind of technical problems caused by having to set the account up to do the live show from Auburn last week. And it just kind of messed everything up. But I think I got it back now. So I'm just leaving it alone, not messing with the settings. So, well, let's get into Alabama. We kind of knew what we were going to have to expect with Tua. What are we expecting from Alabama without him?
The first thing is, I mean, obviously this isn't a one-man team, right? I mean, I think it's easy to say, like, well, Tua was great and therefore everything's changed, but they got five-star guys at every other position, offense and defense. So don't think, like, because he's not there that this game is like, you know, a layup or something. That is 100% not how it is. No. And Alabama is favored in Las Vegas by 2.5 to 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think, even without the Tua injury, one of the things that I've been watching a lot this season is that Alabama's defense is not the same.
Mm.
This is the worst Alabama defense probably since Nick Saban's first year.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Keep going. That made me happy enough.
They are bad in – this is the crazy part. They are bad in areas that work well for us, okay?
Okay.
you know, they are not nearly as good in the front seven as they have – they're still good. It's relative.
Yeah.
They are not nearly as good in the front seven as they have been the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And they have really young linebackers. You know, they're playing like two freshman linebackers who play all the time. And they're okay. They're good physically, but I think we can confuse them and get them out of position and get them in bad matchups. I think that's something that we could do. I think their defensive linemen, you know, they don't have that guy last year who was the stud who pushed everybody in the backfield and caused us all kinds of problems. You know, their equivalent of Derrick Brown last year, he's gone. And so I think, you know, they're good on defense, but they don't have that difference maker up front that completely dominates people. Their best defensive tackle, Raekwon Davis, got hurt against Mississippi State in the same game where Tua got hurt, and he didn't play last week. Supposedly he's going to play, but he could not put weight on his leg. Listen to this. Against SEC teams, Alabama is allowing 5.2 yards per play.
Wow.
Okay, that's the worst since the first year Saban got there, by a good bit.
Seems like it.
Their pass defense is good. They have some good guys in the secondary, but they're allowing 58% completions this year, which is the worst in 10 years. They're not nearly as good at stopping the run. When you look at the run stats, the defensive line stats, and that kind of thing. So
that's against the teams they played.
That's right. This is the other part. The only good team, the really good team they played is LSU. Again, their East opponents this year were Tennessee and South Carolina. And, you know, South Carolina was terrible in the middle of that bad schedule. And Tennessee gave them a game for a while.
They sure did. Yes, they did.
So, you know,
yes, they did.
Please clap.
you know, and their non-conference game was Duke, who's turned out to be kind of a lower level ACC team. And so they really, really have only played LSU, and they lost to them at home. And so I think
gave up 46 points to them at home.
That's right. And so, I think this is a good point. The defense isn't just – it wasn't just like, oh, the LSU game, you know, was a problem for them. It's been a lot of games that have been a problem for Alabama and stopping the other teams from scoring. Let's walk through it here.
Mm-hmm.
Against conference teams, they're allowing 22 points a game, okay? So at LSU, 46, A&M, 21, Ole Miss, 31.
Wow.
You know, South Carolina, 23. So, again, those aren't, you know, A&M, Ole Miss, South Carolina aren't that good. Auburn's offense is better than their offenses, as rough as it's been. So I think at home, you know, we can put up upper 20s against this team, at least. I think we could put up 30. I think we'll put up, you know, 28. I really feel like it.
That would be nice.
You know, our defense, without them having Tua, the big thing turns to they're going to try and take pressure off Mac Jones by running the ball. They still have those great receivers. I mean, Henry Ruggs got banged up in the Mississippi State game, but he's supposed to play. Judy, Devonta Smith, Ruggs, Waddle. Those are very, very, very dangerous guys. And so the big thing is going to be to continue what we've done all year, which is tackling in space. They're going to try and get – we talked about this a little bit yesterday. Alabama's passing game is different than LSU's. They throw a lot of passes at or behind the line of scrimmage, basically, or a couple yards ahead of the line of scrimmage. Basically, you know, like 60% of their passes are within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage or behind it. And so a lot of it is screens. A lot of it is, you know, 2 yard deep slants or out routes or, you know, that kind of thing.
And then they just make a play. They just go.
That's right. And because they got guys like, you know, Judy and Smith and Waddle that can then get the ball and go and make you look bad.
Oh, they sure and do.
They do. So the big thing is going to be tackle them immediately. Do not let them get a full head of steam up.
No.
It's like play them. As soon as they catch the ball, they're on the ground. Don't let them catch it and get moving, because then we're going to have problems. So I think that's a big thing. And Auburn's done really well at that this year. And again, I think with Mac Jones, they're not going to want to take chances throwing the ball deep. I think when they do, it's going to be play action. Auburn got fooled on that last week against Georgia in that one play 2 weeks ago. So I think that's going to be a big thing. They're going to try and take pressure off him by running the ball a lot with Najee Harris. And so that's going to be a big thing. Our defense has been great against the run all year.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to have to just completely take away him and the running game, and don't let them do that, because as soon as they can run the ball well, then it's going to be play action, play action, play action, and they're going to be throwing the ball to those receivers. So I think if the running game doesn't exist, then the play action threat isn't the same. And I don't think, you know, Mac Jones can, if the run game isn't working, I don't think, you know, if they're in third, eight and that kind of stuff, I don't think Mac Jones can sit back there against our defense and pick us apart.
Based on what I have seen against when we played Florida and we played Georgia particularly, I feel like we're going to give up at least one long touchdown at some point in the game. Maybe early, like against Georgia, maybe late, maybe Florida, didn't we, or something?
Again, their offense is much better than Georgia's, okay?
Yeah.
The difference is, you know, Mac Jones isn't Tua. Tua has that thing where he has a very, very quick, accurate release. They do those, you know, passes right at the line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage, and Tua can instantly see the situation and where the defenders are and make the right decision, get the ball out, and it takes Mac Jones longer, and that allows the defense more time to respond to what's happening.
Yeah.
And because he doesn't have all the time with the receivers, he doesn't hit them in stride and in the right places where they want the ball like Tua does. So yes, we're going to give up some plays. They're going to score points. But I don't think that they're going to come in there and pick us apart. I do think we can play, you know, well and stop this offense. And I think the defense is vulnerable to us. And the special teams are terrible for Alabama, as they have been recently.
Forever.
They're You saw an LSU game. I mean, they're playing their backup punter, and he dropped the snap in that game. Their field goal kicker is not great. The only thing that's dangerous for them on special teams is the punt returner. Waddle is outstanding. We do not want to kick him the ball.
We are so overdue for something good to happen on special teams or even on defense. I mean, here's the thing. Yes, our defense has played great at stopping the other team for the most part. But think about this, John. The one thing that our defense hasn't done, I mean, we keep complaining about the offense not scoring enough, and that's absolutely true, right? I mean, it's 100% absolutely true that our offense has not put up the points it needed to. There's no doubt. But defenses on championship teams, defenses help. Just remember a couple of years ago, Alabama's defense had a touchdown, like at least one touchdown in every game the entire season.
Yeah.
How many defensive touchdowns have we scored this year? I can't think of any. And how many defensive touchdowns has our defense scored in big games? And I mean, how many times have we run a punt back for a touchdown? How many times have we run a kickoff back deep in the other territory? Not many. I mean, yeah. I'm just saying, yes, the offense has had its problems. There's no doubt. But they could use a little help, you know. When South Carolina, correct me if I'm wrong, when South Carolina beat Georgia, it was partly that South Carolina's defense was able to limit that Georgia offense the same way that our defense was able to limit Georgia's offense. But also, I believe South Carolina did a pick six on Georgia in that game.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't. And we would have beaten Georgia if we'd gotten a pick six on them. So I'm not trying to crap on the defense. Lord knows the defense is the best thing about this team. I'm just saying, before you unload everything on the offense as being 100% their fault, bear in mind that there are other things that our other two parts of the game could be doing to make up for that, and they are not. And that's just a fact.
No, it's true. Like, we've seen other defenses in the past that set the offense up better by giving them good field position through turnovers and stuff on a regular basis. Even if they didn't score, they would give the offense really short fields and stuff, and we haven't done that this year.
Yeah, against
we stopped the other team, but then our offense has to go 90 yards.
Exactly. I think that was the difference in the Georgia game, was that our defense did everything it could to shut Georgia down, particularly in the first half, and limit them to very short series. And then they get off a 70-yard punt and put us on the 5-freaking-yard line. So, I mean, either find a way to return that punt or block it or something, but I mean, or get a turnover, strip the ball, get an interception. Do something so that you're not continuously putting a mediocre to bad Auburn offense on its own 10-15-yard line every series. It's great that they stop the other team and make them punt, but I think that they should be aware by now they need to do a little bit more. More is required. If they want to win, they need to shoulder even more of the responsibility than they already are. And I realize it sounds weird to be jumping on the defense when they're like the most functional part of the team. I'm just saying the defense and the special team both, if they want to win the game, they're going to have to realize, and there's not much time left in the season to do this, that they've got to do even more. Is that fair? No, not at all. Is that right? No, not at all. But you know what? If you want to win football games, you're going to have to just deal with it. That's it.
No, 100%. And what they can do is they can get to Mac Jones. They can get in the backfield, disrupt him, give him happy feet, make him throw off balance and off timing, and then be ready to pounce on that.
You know, hit him, strip the ball. Of fire.
Just speculating on it.
You know who always has an interception against Alabama? Daniel Thomas.
Yes. Yes, he does.
He's Mr. Interception against Alabama, so I want him to get another one in his senior game.
You know, it just reminds me while I was clicking that button that you know who's coming to Auburn? Who's descending on the plains this week, John?
No.
The Vulgars are full of sound and fury, but believe me, they would not dare take things further.
The Vulgars are coming to the plains, John. The Vulgars are descending. They're full of sound and fury and cheap malt liquor, but they're descending on the plains. Man, do you remember? You and I were there, 1989, the first time the Vulgars descended on the plains. And it was pretty disgusting. It was so weird. It was so weird just seeing people in red with that white A walking around our campus. They'd never really defiled our campus before, other than just students then that wore, you know, there were always, you know, Auburn students that were Alabama fans would wear Alabama stuff to class. People would stare at them like they're crazy, but it was just weird. I mean, we've done a whole show about this. In fact, I guess I ought to, let's see, this is the 25th of November right now as we record this. So we're coming up, let me make another note. We are coming up on the 30th anniversary of first time ever on, let's see.
It's December 2nd, I think.
It's December the 2nd, Monday. So the Monday after the Iron Bowl is the 30th anniversary. So I'm going to make a note that I'll repost our the We Believed that we did just about that game. Okay. It's already, if you want to hear it now, the 30th anniversary is Monday. For those that want to go ahead and hear it now, if you wanting to relive the first time Alabama came to Auburn, just go to www.auwishbone.com and scroll down to the bottom of the page, and I've got little audio players for all five of the episodes we've actually released to the public so far. If you're a patron, by the way, you can go to you can go to the Patreon page and scroll back through the posts and find the sixth episode, I believe I posted, which is the first Tuberville era. But I think that the first five, which is up through the Terry Bowden years, are all on www.auwishbone.com for anybody to listen to. But I'll put the first time ever feed into the regular thing. Maybe I'll do that instead of putting our live video. If folks want to hear the live video show from Sunday, from yesterday actually, right, that we did, it's on YouTube. Just go to AU Wishbone TV. But I'm going to, on Thursday, I think I'll post the We Believe. So, okay, let's see. What else do we need to talk about the Alabama game?
I just think, like, you know, we need to go back to what we kind of the fourth quarter of the Georgia game, Auburn getting rhythm, throwing the ball, quick passes, you know, give Bo Nix some consistency.
Yes.
You know, a lot of Seth Williams, a lot of Schwartz. And then, but definitely running the ball more than we did against Georgia will have more success running the ball. You know, Booby Whitlow and DJ Williams healthy, ready to go in this game. And, you know, mix it up inside and outside, some sweep stuff to Schwartz. Get him the ball in his hands more in this game.
They really were doing that early in the Samford game. I was kind of going, all right, that's enough. You know, I was like, that's too much. Why are we not doing this in big games, and yet in the Samford game, Schwartz is getting like five carries in the first 10 snaps? That kind of freaked me out a little bit. Here's what I expect Saban to be saying in the press conference after the Iron Bowl on Saturday.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
That's what I expect Saban to be saying.
This is it. They have a chance to get there, and I want to ruin it for them, and I want to beat Alabama in every sport ever.
Yes.
I never want them to win another game in any sport, women's tiddlywinks or whatever. I don't want them to win another game. So
give up frustration. Give up the entire athletic department in frustration.
I want to take this away from them this weekend, and I want Auburn to win. We have had this kind of up and down season, and our team has not played its best game, and we could play our best game on Saturday.
After they lose the football game, we can then say to them,
maybe poker's just not your game, Mike. I know. Let's have a spelling contest.
So after we beat them at football and poker, then we can challenge them to a spelling contest, and they can go 0 for 3 against us. That would be good. That would be good. There was one other Oh, yeah. And just in hopes that I can send out a magical charm to our punt return team, I give you
Dancing by the Nile.
Disco tight, tight.
The ladies love the style.
Boss tight, tight.
Rockin' for a mile.
Rockin' tight, tight.
He ate a crocodile.
And an elephant.
Ooh, he gave his life for tourism.
For football. There you go. So just to kind of get him fired up, maybe somebody will point him to this episode and he can he can get all fired up and run us back a touchdown. Because, again, every little bit would help, I think.
We need it. You're right. We need a defensive player and a special teams play this weekend. We need something.
We need all phases of the game to contribute. It just burns me up that we finally executed an onside kick. Remember in 2013, we talked about this before. In 2013, under Chizik, we used to onside kick all the time, and it always worked. And even like in 13, in Gus's first year, we did it a couple of times, and it worked. And then we just quit.
Well, I think they've changed some of the rules about it now.
They did. I will never understand the need to change rules to make something harder that hardly ever worked for people to begin with. I mean, yes, we were getting really good at it, but we were like far and away better at it than anybody else there for a while. How could you, you know, I just can't see anybody looking at the onside kick in college football and going, you know, we need to make this less likely to work. We need to make this, you know, to where it goes from once in 100 tries to zero in 100 tries. I don't understand that, but whatever. I've pretty much said all I want to about it's the 2:30 CBS game. What do we think in terms of how Gus comes out of this game? If we beat Alabama by double digits, and from my lips to God's ears.
Change the last. If we beat Alabama, Gus is fine. Period. Yes.
Well, right. But I mean, what I was getting at is if we really beat them, there won't even be any question about it. If we beat them in a narrow game, yes, he'll be fine. But there'll still be grumbling about it. And if we don't beat them, God forbid, then you start worrying. And if they beat us soundly. If we get like a weird 2001 type game, you know, where just the improbable happens and the wheels fall off, I get a little nervous then. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to go too far down that path, but, you know.
We got next week to talk about that scenario.
That's right. So, all right.
Positive thoughts.
Positive, absolutely. And I am very positive. I feel better about this one than I felt about 2017, honestly. If the offense was just a little bit better, I would feel complete confidence. Believe me, you and I were at the Georgia game. We know how well they played and should have really, I mean, we can say that about all three losses, but they should have been in it and they should have won, but certainly that game. So are we ready to roll out Jared's installment of the superhero battle?
We are. I can't wait to see.
All right. So for those that don't know, yard sale artist Jared Albrecht is a member of our White Rocket Entertainment family, and he hosts. He's one of our Bond on Her Majesty's Secret podcast hosts, along with the guest on our video show last week in Auburn, Delvin Williams, and others, including Pat, the victim of the eagle in these. And so he's been giving us. And he's a comics artist. He does conventions all over the country and does stuff with me. And he's been giving us these fantastic analogies of what superhero or villain was Auburn like in this game and what was the other team like. And so here is the Samford installment as soon as I push this button right here.
Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist from the Long Box Crusade Network, here with your Auburn superhero battles. This week, I would say our Auburn University Tigers looked like the Legion of Superheroes. And I say that because I think like 50 or 60 people got to be on the roster during that game. Lots of people playing. And when the Legion of Superheroes goes out to do stuff, they usually win because they're pretty powerful and there's a whole bunch of them. Mm-hmm. We played a lot of players is what I'm saying. And then you have Samford Bulldogs, who are just like Batman's friend. Commissioner Gordon. Yeah, they were Commissioner Gordon. Commissioner Gordon has a lot of tenacity, and he doesn't ever quit, and I'll tip my cap to the Bulldogs for playing four quarters of football and playing their hearts out, but at the end of the day, we were the Legion of Superheroes beating up on an old man in Gotham City. So with that behind us, we have just to look forward to the Iron Bowl, where I'm really hoping that we get that Superman-like upgrade that I've been looking for all year, and I still believe it can happen. But before I sign off, of course, we have to check in with the ongoing conflict between Pat and the Eagle. Well, good news, folks. The conflict is over.
Oh.
Peace has returned to the studio.
Oh.
Pat is back at his spot in the booth, ready to play the outro song, and all is well. Not because he won the battle, but because we woke up one day and Everything had stopped. We found a letter. The letter said, "Dear Pat, I'm retiring. You did not win. You still nobody likes you. Signed, Nova the Eagle." So even though that wasn't the nicest letter we've ever received, we want to say happy retirement to Nova. We look forward to welcoming Aria into the studio as the new Eagle, and hopefully things will go better. We'll see. I'm certain I haven't already built some sort of storyline around it. Poor Eagle, everybody.
See, that's great. I mean, not only did he have a really, really solid... I love the Legion of Superheroes comparison, considering we were playing the third-string quarterback and stuff. That's all. That's like the Legion of Substitute Heroes. That's like the kid that can turn himself to look like dirt or whatever, you know, like the lowest-powered Legionnaire. But also, he incorporated real-world events into the saga of the Eagle and Pat, see, because the Eagle retired now. So that's very good. That's good. That's... I hope Jared will continue doing these, and I'm looking forward to more installments in the future.
As I've said before, the rest of this humble podcast is just a delivery vehicle for the Eagle story. So
that's fair. That really is fair. All right. Well, let me see. It looks like it's time for...
Oh, my God! Cal! Oh, my God!
It is time for the SEC... Power poll.
And I say you.
How are our results this week, John?
Results are clear. How about that?
Okay.
All right. Again, not a shock. Arkansas alone at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And then Vanderbilt kind of by itself. Then kind of a lower tier, Kentucky, Missouri, South Carolina, Mississippi State, kind of the lower quadrant. Mm-hmm. And then kind of the mediocre middle is Tennessee and Ole Miss, basically equal, which is makes sense to me. The Tennessee – it really improved. And then mm-hmm. you got kind of Texas A&M by itself. And then Auburn and Florida, kind of equal there. Mm-hmm. Then Alabama slightly above those two. And then Georgia slightly above Alabama. And LSU all alone clearly in first place.
So it's interesting that Alabama is ranked above us, which is fair because they've only got one loss and we got three. But yet we'll see if we can even that out a little bit on Saturday. So –
oh yeah.
Tell the folks, how did we get that ranking? How can they participate?
So each week I send the patrons an email, and they can click on this easy survey and vote. Just drag and drop the teams in the order they like, and then I tabulate the results.
There you go. So if you become a patron, you too will be an official voter in the AU Wishbone SEC Power Poll. And if you want to do that, all you got to do is go to www.auwishbone.com, auwishbone.com, and click on the orange button there that says Become a Patron. It'll take you right through to the Patreon site, to our page. It is the me page. It is the White Rocket Entertainment page. And I changed the banner there to reflect all the various shows that we produce so that, you know, whichever show you like best, or if you like all of our shows, or just some of our shows, or just one of our shows, that's fine. But it all goes to help make sure our various shows stay on the air. And so for as little as a dollar a month, though we appreciate more, and many of you do quite a bit more, and we appreciate that, it allows us to do things like just have our regular show, pay for our web space, our podcasting, getting on iTunes and everything. It allows us to upgrade our equipment. We've recently upgraded some of our equipment here. It allows us to do things like do the live video show and help and pay Auburn Elvis the amount he has to get for the data connection to be able to do that. And there's just a whole slew of expenses we incur trying to do as much of this as we can for you guys, and that really makes it possible. So thank you so much to our existing patrons. And in fact, I always thank our existing patrons in the order of top to bottom that they – from our biggest supporters down to the super critical other supporters that all do something, right? Everybody contributes on this list. So there's Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson, which are in pretty much the Eagle Has Landed Club for White Rocket. And then we have Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, Gary Grant, AU Fan KSC, Wynn Carroll, Brian Gray, Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, hey Willie, Tom Anderson, Susan Trawick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. What's up, Richard? So good to get to see you last week, too. William Morgan, Phil Davis, Joshua Corbett, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, AU Falling Up, Alchemist Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Johnny Caldwell, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian. I'm 99% of the way there on her name, John. Catherine England, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Ulbrich, William Glenn Matthews. And then we have Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Millen, Kevin Kinoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Mickey B. Oh, Mickey, I'm sorry. It's Mickey B. Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vizicana, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, and C.T. Wayne. Ah, man, just a few more to go. But we love you all. Jeremy Minton, Wardam Wade, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Wyatt, Trevor Johnson, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, and then we have David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth, and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, and then also Chris, Brent Rumble, and our occasional donors, including the awesome Surfer Chickify and our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. John, we had a drawing at the live video show. You and Delvin and I drew out names, and I believe we drew six names, and it's listed there. So I haven't posted anywhere yet, but if you go back and watch the live show from Auburn, from the Georgia game, you can see who won. And so as soon as all the crazy Iron Bowl stuff lets up, I'm going to post out, you know, who won, and we will contact them and offer them some prizes.
Would you like me to say their names?
Yes. Who won?
Thomas Brinson, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Steve Harwin, James Taylor, Phil Davis, Preston Settle.
There you go. And so we will be offering them a variety of things. I know for a fact that at least one of those six are not AU Wishbone viewers. They're like on Her Majesty's Secret Podcast or White Rocket or something like that. So we want to have a variety of things, and we will do that. So that is awesome. This is one more way that we show our appreciation to you guys for all that you do, is by coming up with ways to reward you back. All right. Let me see. So www.auwishbone.com, iTunes, War Eagle Reader. Tell a friend. And now I believe...
Holy cow! Oh, my God!
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
And I say to you...
Time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Come on, man.
All right, what do we got this week?
All right, first question is from Samuel Salvatore, who says, "Hey, guys, War Eagle, is Auburn really the best defense that Alabama has faced all season?"
Ooh.
And he's got a second part, but before we get to the second part, definitely yes.
Yeah.
And not close. They haven't faced any really good – the best defenses they have faced are South Carolina and LSU.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't think LSU's defense is that great this year.
No. It's not bad. It's just not great.
No.
It gave up 43 to Alabama.
Yeah. They haven't played a lot of tough road games either, so – he says, are SEC officials starting their conspiracy by ejecting Auburn defensive back on phantom targeting call?
Yes.
Do you think the officials will make some phantom calls this weekend?
I liked some – yes, and I liked how somebody pointed out – I said on Twitter that the Pac-12 – you know, when Oregon lost to Arizona State, I said the Pac-12 has at least one, if not three or four games like this every season. And somebody replied, I wish I remembered who it was, somebody replied that it's because the Pac-12 hadn't figured out yet that you work the system like the SEC does so you'll have a team in the playoffs.
Well, that, but the other thing I thought about after is they played nine conference games and we only played eight. So if they only played eight, they would have been playing a smaller team this weekend too before rivalry weekend. And so that – bites them in the rear.
Yeah, but I just can't see them saying, you know what we need to do is get that 5-5 Arizona State off our schedule because that's the one that worries me. You know, I mean, I understand it's nine conference teams, but, well, for one thing, I've said all along that Oregon was doing it with smoke and mirrors and there was no way they were a playoff team, and I was right. So there you go.
Yeah. So, all right, next question. Chris Thrash, who says, I was going to send you a question, but then I jumped off sides.
No kidding.
Did you have a chance to read Justin Ferguson's piece in The Athletic arguing that this is the best defense since 1989? And what are your thoughts on that?
I did not, but it's hard to think of. That was the last of the great Pat Dye defenses.
I did read it, and I thought it was really good. He went back with a variety of stats to see comparing various defenses. And he looked at scoring defense and comparative to, you know, and then like some advanced analytics, but also kind of how they work comparatively to everybody else. And because obviously offense is completely different now than it was in but the final candidates were kind of this defense, 2007, 2004, and then like 88 and 89. Really.
All right. 04. Yeah, that's right. We can't forget. Well, 03 had a good defense too, and it was largely the same players as 04. We actually, in fact, arguably the 03 defense had better linebackers than 04.
It did, but 04 had better stats. I mean, they had people forget this now. The 04 defense averaged only allowed like 8 points a game or something. It was ridiculous.
And that was skewed because that team would always give up a long touchdown in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
In other words, the 04's defense should have been even better. They gave Georgia its own – they were shutting Georgia out and gave up a touchdown the last play of the game with backups
in. I'm still unhappy about that.
Right. Oh, my dad was pitching a fit. And in the SEC championship game, they gave up a long run in the fourth quarter to Tennessee, to that running back. And against Virginia Tech, we were beating them like 16-7 in the fourth quarter, and we gave up a long pass for a touchdown in the fourth quarter. That was the one thing I was mad at Chizik about that year, was that we would be shutting teams out or holding them to single digits, and then every dang game we'd give up an 80-yard bomb in the last drive of the game and make it look closer than it was. That didn't help us in trying to get into the national championship game either.
That's true.
Okay, well, that's a strange thing to be complaining about now, so I'm sorry. What else we got? Fair. What else we got?
That's very on brand for us, though.
It is.
But Preston Settle says, John Devane, I feel like Auburn's defense has a lot of pent-up frustration.
Yeah.
If you look, the level of Auburn's defense is played, consider it closes the close losses to LSU, Florida, and Georgia, there has to be a great deal of frustration. Could the Auburn defense unleash all that frustration next week against the Alabama offensive line, Mac Jones, and the younger Tagovailoa? He says, I want to see 10 win Auburn.
And it would keep the streak going with the 9-win teams beating Saban.
Well, and here's the other – so there's that stat, and the other stat is that when both teams are ranked, Nick Saban has never won in Auburn.
Wow. That's awesome, too. And honestly, even though we lost to Florida by more points than we did to the other two teams, that was really because of that like 80-yard run when the game was already over at the end. If you take that away, it's like a 3-point game like the other two pretty much. And I thought our defense looked super impressive in the fourth quarter against Georgia. Our defense looked super impressive running that scheme it ran against LSU to limit them. But I thought that the most terrorizing and disruptive our defense has looked all year was against Florida, because they went out there against Florida and they looked like they wanted to eat that quarterback alive. They were in. They made him fumble. You know, they just kept disrupting, and that's what I want to see us do against Alabama.
And you know, Marlon Davidson won Defensive Lineman of the Week this week. He has passed Derrick Brown. So Derrick Brown needs to win Defensive Lineman of the Week this week to catch Marlon Davidson and tie the series up. So he's due.
Look out. He's going to be a wild man. All right.
Scott Crankton says, Saturday, this is his the title of his email is Doomsday Scenario.
All right.
So Saturday, 2 minutes left in the game, facing fourth and three, would you A, go for it, B, trot Carlson out for a 41-yard game-winning field goal?
41!
Asking for a friend. Happy Thanksgiving.
What was it? What was the distance? Give me down in distance.
41.
But I mean,
it's fourth and three.
Oh, God. Or a 41-yard field goal. Now, okay, 41, I might let him take the shot because – 40 and, you know, he hasn't missed inside of 40, has he, right? I don't think.
No, he's good inside of 40. So maybe 41, but if it was 42 or 43, no.
Yeah. if you start pulling me further back than 41, I'm definitely going for it. But see, now that begs a question, which is kind of where I thought he was going, but I thought where he ended up going was even better. But I can say, how do you even do it? Because I'm sitting there going, find a way to give it to Whitlow, get the first down, and don't make it one of those slow-developing plays where Whitlow ends up losing 15 yards somehow. You know, you blink your eyes and Whitlow is 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage. That's not what I want. No.
No.
Quick hitter. But, in fact, I might even fake it to him and have Bo run for it. But
yes.
But the one thing you don't want to do in that scenario, the one thing you absolutely don't want to do is some funky play where you throw the ball to a player that hasn't been in the game the entire game until that play.
That's right.
That you don't want to do that.
And again, we saw Bo run it some effectively against Georgia. I think we're going to see a lot more of that this weekend. I think he's going to lay it all on the line. He's going to be running the ball when Alabama's taking away the other options and making plays.
So. Man, and there's no other games to save him for at this point other than the bowl. So
put it out there. So, all right, two more questions here. This is from Danny Flack, who says that your Iron Bowl prop bets here. He says,
okay,
rank these events from most to least frequent. So A is holding calls against Alabama offensive linemen.
That's never going to happen, so that's easy.
B is roughing the passer calls against Auburn.
There'll be about six of those.
C is Gary Danielson references to the kick six.
Oh, God. Or something else inane, yes.
All right, D is shots of Tua on the Alabama sideline.
With little candles all around him, and the majorettes will be kneeling down, praying in a little circle around him, and the angels will be, oh gosh, yeah, no, that'll absolutely happen.
And E is Gary Danielson references to Nick Saban as Nick.
All of those are going to happen multiple times, except the holding against Alabama's defensive line, which isn't ever going to happen. So it's zero, lots. Well, how many ever? Don't you agree?
Yes.
Do you think there'll be a? What's the over under you would bet on holding calls against Alabama's offensive line?
One.
Yes, absolutely one, and I would bet the under. I would absolutely.
I might take the push there. I think there might be one at the end.
Well, that's the thing. That's how they win, is it's going to be a push. It's going to be one, but I would not take the over. I would certainly – I think it's more like – if it's zero or two, it's more likely to be zero than to be two.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, last question comes from Auburn Elvis.
Ah. What do we got from Auburn Elvis?
He says, hi, guys. I'm a proud member of the Sandboard fan club here.
I don't have facts.
Okay.
I'm telling you, I met a couple of people in Auburn. We were there for the Georgia game. They came up to me and they said, I listen to the podcast and I'm a member of the Sandboard fan club.
And I say you.
All right.
So he says, instead of a question, can you please pass along this advice for anyone going to the Iron Bowl on Saturday? It's a trick I learned while screaming for 90 plus minutes at lower division soccer games. Bring a bunch of Ricola or some other throat lozenges with menthol and suck on them throughout the game. They coat your throat and help you keep your voice going longer. It really works.
Oh,
it says War Eagle. So I like it, because to win this game, we're going to need the crowd to be at maximum roar from the go. Like that level we were at the fourth quarter in the Georgia game, we got to be there when the team gets on the field and keep it going.
When Alabama turns their running backs loose, we got to be able to say,
well, we got a cage strong enough to hold an animal like you here.
That's right. So,
and Mac Jones is going to be looking around trying to change the play and stuff, and we need to make it where he can't hear anything.
You know what Alabama represents, don't you, John?
It's that time of year, Van, when we always play this song.
I was going to say, what Alabama represents.
And that's nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
And that means that in respect for our foe, to honor our respected foe coming up on Saturday, we have to play their national anthem, which of course is... Russia, number one. Iran, number one. Bama, number one.
The Vulgars are full of sound and fury, but believe me, they would not dare take things further.
Maybe poker's just not your game, Mike. I know. Let's have a spelling contest.
I had to just get all this stuff out. This is stuff I mostly save for the Alabama game every year.
I must break you.
That is right. This is stuff I've been saving. I mean, half the soundboard is stuff I save for the Alabama game, and so I have to get it all out this time. So there we go. Bama, number one, our respected foe. So as long as they don't get in a spelling contest. Was that our last question?
That was our last question.
All right. Well, then I guess we need to take it around the world.
A trip around the FTC.
Well, Georgia was able to pull out a tight one against the Collie Dogs. That did not surprise me at all. I said that was going to be a close game. And because Georgia just doesn't really beat anybody soundly this year. They have to, it's squeakers. It's a squeaker. It's a squeaker.
They play with their food.
They did till the very last second. Yeah, I mean, so that was an interesting game. LSU, that game was actually close. All right, I said on last week's show that I thought the LSU-Arkansas game would be close for at least a quarter, if not a half. And it kind of was, and I changed the channel to the Missouri game for a couple of minutes. And then my wife goes, oh, it's 56-20. And I'm like, well, I'm glad I changed the channel, because did LSU just wake up suddenly or what? I didn't get to watch.
No, they were just doing their thing and not really worrying about Arkansas.
Yeah, well, they're not somebody you have to worry about. So, and then Tennessee, Missouri was kind of a back and forth game. I didn't really. The only game I watched all the way through, wire to wire, was our game. I had the others just kind of on in the background. So this was like Tennessee and Missouri kind of went back and forth a little bit. Missouri had. All right, here was the thing I wanted to mention about Missouri. I don't know why Missouri has decided that in terms of uniforms, they have to try to be the Oregon of the SEC, but they need to stop because this is just bad. They've got like five different looks they've worn over the last few years at least. Did you see what they look like in this game?
Yeah, oh, I was not a fan of that.
That yellow, it's that awful hurt your eyes yellow that just with the, oh, just you. Missouri's got a classic look. You know, they've got black as one of their colors. That's cool. Go with that, man. Use that yellow as like a as a detail. Don't make it your main color. Dang. I mean, even Oregon seems to figure out every now and then that dark green works better than anything else they have. So, you know. But, yeah, Tennessee won. So, let's see. Alabama gave up a field goal but beat Western Carolina without Tua. Kentucky, UT Martin, okay. Mississippi State beat Abigail Christian. And, of course, now Abigail Christian, as we discovered they are called last week, now that means that Abigail Christian may not make the championship game of the divisions conference. I had predicted that Abigail Christian would play the Southern Fighting in the divisions conference. So I don't know what to think now. What do you think that Abigail can pull it out in their big season finale?
So.
I don't know. It's going to be tough against Lucy Muslim. We'll see. And then Vanderbilt got a shutout. Holy! When was the last time Vanderbilt shut somebody out? I don't know.
I don't know, but it's been a while.
That's nice. Any thoughts on any of those, or you want to go on to next week?
No, I don't really thought so.
All right. Well, let's see. The Thursday night Egg Bowl, John. You lived in Mississippi for a while there. What should we expect in the big Egg Bowl Thursday? The Thanksgiving tradition where we all across America, we gather around and bring families together to give thanks for Ole Miss playing Mississippi State.
It's two desperate teams.
It's always two desperate teams.
You know, but it's really desperate teams. I mean, you think I'm joking, but...
No, I don't. It's just, you know, funny. I'm just...
Mississippi
I give
is,
thanks I, that I, John. I just give thanks that I'm not an Ole Miss or Mississippi State fan.
Amen to that. I did want to say that, like, you know how how Auburn fans in general feel, like we feel like this defense, they've been so great, and we should have done more with this season.
Sure, yeah.
This is exactly how Mississippi State fans feel about last year. They had the best defense in the conference last year.
Mm-hmm.
They had three first round picks on the defensive line,
man,
and their offense was terrible last year, and they won 8 games. So
it sounds so familiar somehow.
They don't love that coach right now because they were in that situation.
This all sounds so familiar somehow. A team with a great defense, NFL prospects across the defensive line, terrible offense, and won 8 games. Man, this sounds familiar. I can't put my finger on who that's reminding me of, but it somehow sounds familiar. So I don't know.
Ole Miss, I mean, Rich Rod has really got that offense going with that running quarterback. They're doing a lot of damage to people, and I think so. It actually is going to be a fun game to watch.
Isn't it crazy how different they are now? Just a couple of years ago, it seems like they were the passing offense of the country, and then they go like a couple of years of being terrible, and now they're like the running offense of all time.
A year ago, they had 3 great receivers, and they were throwing the ball over the place, and now
it's the whole opposite.
Completely different.
It's so crazy. Well, remember, there's one rule about the Egg Bowl, and that is the team that's the underdog always wins. It's funny because most of these rivalry games like this, we say that, and yet it really doesn't happen that much. It's way more the exception. It's the exception everybody remembers, but it's more the exception than the rule. Not so the Egg Bowl. The Egg Bowl, if you go back and look at like the last 10 Egg Bowls, I guarantee you like 7 or 8 of them were won by the team that had no business winning the game. And so this year that would be, I don't know, honestly. They're both kind of...
I think Ole Miss is the... Because they're the road team.
Yeah.
It's in Starkville.
Okay.
So I think Ole Miss is the team that's more...
Well, here's the thing. In the last 10 years, you had Hugh Freeze and Dan Mullen, who are both very capable football coaches. Is that fair?
Sure.
And so some years, Mullen would have it cooking at Mississippi State, and Ole Miss would win. And some years, Freeze had it cooking at Ole Miss, and Mississippi State would win. This year, neither one of them really has anything cooking other than just, you know, the running game, like you say, or whatever. So I don't feel like
Mississippi State needs to win to get to a bowl game, and Ole Miss can deny them that.
All right, hold on. Oh crap! Again, since I reorganized this, I can't find anything.
My cold dead hands. Lock of the
week. There it is. Ole Miss is going to win, and that was, by the way, my
factoid of the week.
Factoid of the week.
About the winner is always the underdog. All right.
We really have emptied out the whole
scoreboard. It's the end of the season, John, and everything must go. this has been the all-time sound. Some episodes I barely even touch it, but this episode, But this was the episode I needed a whole lot of stuff to empty out. Friday, we had the Missouri-Arkansas. If Arkansas and LSU is the battle of the golden boot, is this like the battle of the golden knee pads? Since it's higher up the leg,
they have some stupid name for it, but I don't care enough to even look.
The Battle of the Golden Hip.
Yeah, there are better things to do on Friday afternoon than watch this game.
Yeah, it's true. Surely Missouri. You know what though? I started to say surely Missouri will win. This is the kind of game. If Arkansas was a little better, this is going to sound weird, but bear with me. If Arkansas was a little better, I would say Missouri easily wins. But because Arkansas is so bad, this is the kind of game Missouri loses.
Yeah. But again,
you're going to tell me a team that lost to Wyoming is going to come out there and stomp this Arkansas team?
They're not going to stomp them, but they're going to win.
We'll see.
There are better games on Friday. Don't watch them.
There are. And then Saturday, we've got the Georgia Bowl, Georgia Tech, clean old fashioned hate. Does Georgia even care about Georgia Tech at this point anymore, or are they just like...
No, they own them completely, and so they've stopped respecting them, and they're going to kill. Georgia Tech is new coach, changing offensive schemes. They've ditched the wishbone, and they're in real trouble.
Yeah, it would be so nice if Georgia Tech could pull this game out of nowhere. I'm looking forward in a few days, down the road a little bit, to talking about that Georgia-LSU game. We got to get in and break that one down. We might do that on a Sunday show coming up sometime too, because I really kind of want to dig into Georgia-LSU in the championship game. And it's just, to me, it's a very interesting matchup for once. I'm so sick of Alabama and Georgia, or Alabama, you know, whoever, Florida. This is an interesting matchup finally, and I want to dig into it a little bit. Let's see, Louisville at Kentucky. They usually play that at the beginning of the year, not the end.
Mm-hmm.
But where does Louisville stand right now? They're
good actually. They replaced Bobby Petrino with Scott Satterfield, the guy who was at Appalachian State. He's done a really, really good job there. Really improved. He should be getting some National Coach of the Year votes. He's done such a dramatic job turnaround there. So I think this would be a good game.
And meanwhile, Stoops may be heading to FSU.
He said no.
Oh, really? Wow.
He said no. He's staying in Kentucky.
Why on God's green earth would you turn down Florida State to stay at Kentucky in football?
Because he wins seven games at Kentucky and they're delighted.
Man. Okay.
Florida State just fired a guy in 2 years.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Wow. I just never thought I'd. That's how far Florida State has fallen. They used to be one of the top two or three programs in the country for a while there. You wouldn't dare say no to them. They're in Tennessee territory now.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I would hate for a team that I care about to do anything precipitous and end up in a situation like Tennessee and Florida State. And by the way, it's funny because I was saying the other day that the two teams that gave us the biggest fits in the Pat Dye era were Tennessee and Florida State. Those were the two teams we used to worry about the most every year, remember?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when we were really good, those were the two teams we'd lose to. So, Vanderbilt at Tennessee. You got to think Tennessee's going to win this, right? They've cranked it up.
Vanderbilt's beat them 2 years in a row, too. So, this is...
It's payback is due, right? Clemson at South Carolina. I've said it before. It would be so funny if South Carolina ended the season with a losing record, and yet they beat Georgia and Clemson. And they could...
If Clemson loses, they're out. I'm just saying that.
Yeah. Well, somebody pointed out that the problem is South Carolina fans got spoiled by Spurrier winning 10 games every year.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're winning like
fluky.
Yeah, now they're winning like five and they don't like it. So imagine following Spurrier with Muschamp. It seems like if only there had been another program that had demonstrated what would happen when you did that. if only some other program had previously had Spurrier and then gone to Muschamp, you could have seen, you know, this is what will happen, but oh well. Let's see. Texas A&M at LSU. Again, this is a game I expect to be closer than people expect for a few minutes at least.
Remember, this was the game last year that was the last game of the season. It was the 7 overtime night game that was just bonkers.
Oh gosh.
And
LSU always wins, right?
Yeah, but I think A&M stole that one, I think, at the end of the overtime game. But it was very fluky, and LSU is not going to let them hang around because of that.
Yeah. I think this is the series that for as long as A&M had been in the conference, they never won this game.
Yeah, LSU always wins.
LSU always wins, yeah. And then Florida State at Florida, which is you got to think Florida's going to win by big margin. You got to get in your shots while you can. I mean, can you imagine if Alabama went through a phase where they're winning like four or five games a year? We could just beat their brakes off every year.
Can.
Just pile up the wins in the win column, sock them away for a rainy day. You know,
again, Florida State has maybe the worst offensive line in the Power Five, and you can imagine those two defensive ends for Florida. They're sitting at home tonight, like just waiting for the game to start.
That's hard to imagine that Florida State is in that situation, but wow, it has come to that. All right, well, it is Iron Bowl week. How do you plan on watching the game other than like as to quote show from Ready Player One when H asked him how do you watch horror movies, he says, between my fingers. How do you plan to watch the Iron Bowl?
Like every year, just in the house, on the edge of the seat, pacing, that kind of thing. It's not a the funnest viewing experience of the year.
No, I've always said, right, that's the thing about the Iron Bowl is it's not fun to watch. It should be. We are the proud co-owners, John, of the greatest college football rivalry in America. And yet it's not fun to watch because it's agony. I mean, all the rivalry games to some degree are agony, but this is one that unless you're just like romping and winning by 30, and even then I'm like, oh, Saban's going to do something. We're up by 30 now, but they're going to do something and it's going to be close again. It's just that game is so intense that it's not fun. It's just one of the most popular tweets I ever tweeted is when I said watching the Alabama game is not fun. It's like having a bomb handcuffed to your wrist for 3 hours, and you're just waiting to see if it goes off or not. And people all really identified with that.
Yes.
So.
No, it's a tough 3 hours, but we're at home.
Yeah.
We got a good team, and our defense is going to play well in this game, and they're playing their backup quarterback. And, I think this defense is worse than some of the other ones we played this year, and we're going to make some plays against them.
Well, John, as we wrap up, good luck to the Auburn Tigers, of course, but also good luck to everybody down in the loveliest village on the plains, because the Vulgars are coming.
The Vulgars are full of sound and fury, but believe me, they would not dare take things further.
The Vulgars are coming, John. That's going to do it for this week. We will be back on probably Sunday on a live video show on AU Wishbone TV. Join us on YouTube. You can leave comments and ask questions during the show, and we'll pop them up on the screen. It's a lot of fun. And then we'll be back as in our usual spot, midnight Monday night, early Tuesday morning. I guess our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.